Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. I'm Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I am a psychoanalyst specializing in weight, food, and body image issues. And I'm here to help you break free of the diet trap and lose weight without dieting. That means no more counting calories or carbs or fat grams. No more thinking about food all the time. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health, all without ever going on another diet. So, I have a question for you. How often do you feel hopeless about food? Maybe you wake up every morning and say, I'm going to be good today. I'm not even going to think about having a single carb or a bite of sugar or gluten or anything I think I shouldn't have. And the next thing you know, you fall off the diet wagon and feel guilty. So, you try again. And there are so many choices, aren't there? Like Weight Watchers, Paleo, South Beach, Mediterranean, low carb, high carb, liquid, ketogenic, even the cookie diet. Maybe you also try counting steps as well as calories. But you just end up with a really cool Fitbit and zero sustainable weight loss. Or you hire a personal trainer, join a gym, but nothing works in the long run. So there you are with two different sets of clothes in your closet, one for the size you are and one for the size you want to be. You're probably more than ready for something new, but you don't know what to do instead of dieting, and you're afraid that if you're not on a diet, you're going to gain weight. Well, this is your lucky day because I am going to tell you why diets don't work, and I'll show you exactly how to create permanent, sustainable weight loss. And guess what? It's not about willpower. In fact, I got to say that again because it is so important. It's not about willpower. It's not about willpower. Diets fail because on some level, they're about deprivation, and that always leads to overeating or binging. That's because the anticipation of deprivation, the anticipation of not being able to eat what you want, will make you want it more. And if you're thinking about not having pizza or pasta or ice cream, then you got pizza or pasta or ice cream on the brain all day. And that puts the focus on the wrong thing, which is what you're eating instead of why. Ultimately, diets fail because they only deal with food. Diets do not address the underlying reasons that make you turn to food in the first place, for comfort, distraction, to numb yourself, and much, much, much more. So today, I'm going to give you some ways to start changing your relationship to food. I'm going to give you some things that you can implement right away. But first, I want to talk a little bit about why we turn to food in the first place. Well, for starters, our very first experience of love and connection is bound up with our initial experience of feeding, of being fed when we're babies. Now think about what happens when a baby is fed. He or she is there feeling safe and loved in the arms of a loving parent, and eating gets connected with that early sense of love and safety and connection and bonding. And that's why, and this may sound a little strange at first, deep in our psyche, food actually represents people. Like, we don't actively, consciously think of it that way, but that's how it registers in our unconscious minds. That's why, if you think about it, we actually use the same words for both food and love. We describe relationships as fulfilling or satisfying. We talk about being hungry for love, or say someone is starving for attention. Now, as you know, people can be unpredictable, unreliable, and unavailable. Whereas food is predictable, it's reliable, and it's available. It can be easier and sometimes feel safer to turn to food instead of to people. So eating for comfort really means having the experience of being comforted by another person. Now, as an example, Let me tell you about my client, Jenna. And just so you know, all names are changed to protect people's confidentiality. When Jenna first came to see me, she was 30 years old and 30 pounds overweight. She was single, she had a good job, but she felt like a failure in life because she just could not get a handle on her weight. Now, Jenna went on her first diet at about age 12, and she'd been on one diet or another for her entire adult life. Jenna wanted to be done with dieting, and she didn't just want to lose weight. She wanted to lose the obsession, the preoccupation with food and her weight. Food was all she thought about from the second she woke up until the minute her head hit the pillow. At breakfast, she was thinking about lunch. At lunch, she was thinking about dinner. At night, she was worried about the next day. When she hung out with friends, she was worried that they were judging her for what she was eating. She thought all of her friends were some form of the food police. And she didn't go out with guys because she didn't want anyone to see or, God forbid, touch her body. She hated the way she looked, and she couldn't imagine that any man would find her attractive. Well, I helped Jenna totally transform her relationship to food by changing her relationship to herself. But I remember the day she walked into my office saying, "Dr. Nina, maybe your other patients are dealing with emotional eating and things like that." She said, "But I'm a food addict. I'm addicted to Chunky Monkey," she tells me. And furthermore, she says, she could prove it. And she was skeptical when I told her, "I don't know. I don't think food is the real problem." And again, she said she could prove that she was actually addicted to ice cream. So I said, "Okay, I'm all ears. Prove it." So she shared with me that the night before, she was watching TV after work, and she'd had a good day at work. She was just home, chilling out. And suddenly, as she put it, Ben and Jerry's was calling her name. She's like, "Calling my name!" She told me nothing was wrong, nothing was bothering her, everything was just fine. Clearly, she said, this was not anything to do with emotional eating. She was addicted to Chunky Monkey ice cream. I said, "Well, let's see." And I asked her what she'd been watching on TV. She said it was Charmed, her favorite show. She's like, "See, I was happy. I was watching my favorite show. I'm addicted to ice cream. Don't you get it?" She was getting a little frustrated with me at that point. I asked what the episode was about, and she's like, "Oh, it's the one where the devil comes down and the sisters start fighting and everything gets really contentious and nasty." And that's when she stopped and had her Oprah aha moment. She said, oh, wait, I get it. Oh, I get it. Because in that moment, Jenna realized that watching the episode of Charmed had activated some thoughts and emotions about her own sisters. They had a really bad relationship. And before those thoughts and feelings could reach her conscious awareness, she turned to Ben and Jerry's for comfort and distraction. If we had focused on ice cream, we would have completely missed everything else that was going on. So the real problem was not Chunky Monkey ice cream. The real problem was Jenna's difficulty facing her problematic relationship with her sisters and her difficulty tolerating these kinds of painful feelings. So as you can see, when you understand what's going on inside your head and your heart, you can respond to yourself differently. You can create new habits that eventually feel as comfortable as the old ones. If you automatically eat when you're upset, you can learn new ways to respond to yourself, and I'm actually going to help you out with that a little bit later. So Jenna is living proof that change is possible. After working with me, she started seeing and paying attention to and noticing what was eating at her instead of focusing on what she was eating. She lost weight, and she kept it off, and not only that, this is the part I love, she started dating even before she lost weight. So as you can see, for Jenna and for you, it's not about willpower. This is really important because, God, there is so much misinformation out there and lots of people are confused. But really, if you are turning to food, it's not because your brain has formed a physical addiction to the substance of whatever it is that you're eating. It's because your mind is looking for a way to feel better. Now, I've been doing this work for 15 years, and I started noticing some patterns when people were talking about food. So whenever they talked about craving ice cream, like Jenna, it wasn't ice cream they really wanted. It was comfort. But like Jenna, you can get so good at unconsciously coping by eating, it could be tough to know exactly what you're feeling. Well, I found a way to crack the code of emotional eating, and I'm about to share it with you. I call it the food mood formula. Now, people tend to think in terms of sweet or savory when they think of types of food, but I've found that texture is actually the key to connecting food and mood. And there are three basic categories: smooth, creamy foods like ice cream or pudding, filling foods, bread, pasta, pizza, cake, muffins, crunchy food like chips or crackers. So let's take a moment and think about your last craving. Was it for something smooth, like did you reach for ice cream, or filling? Maybe you were all about pizza or cake. And maybe it was crunchy and you grabbed that last bag of chips. Okay, so what does it all mean? Well, if it's sweet, smooth, and creamy, it's likely that you're in need of nurturing and soothing. That type of food is related to a need for comfort. And so if that's your go-to, then that is a sign that you need to learn how to comfort yourself in a different way. Filling foods point to loneliness, since they're bulky and they fill an inner void. So if you crave bread, pizza, pasta, muffins, cake, and those sorts of filling, bulky foods, you may be feeling deprived or lonely and symbolically filling the hole in your soul through food. Crunchy textures are associated with anger. Chips, pretzels, everything that makes you bite down hard, that's a sign that you may be angry, frustrated, or annoyed. And you might want to think about, if you weren't angry at yourself for what you're eating, who or what would you be angry with? Now, if this resonates with you, or if you have any questions, I would love to hear from you. The call-in number is 818-602-4929. Again, that's 818-602-4929. You can also tweet me at WinTheDietWar or email dr.nina@WinTheDietWar. Okay, that was super fast. I'm looking at a private message on Twitter from someone who wants to be anonymous. I can't tell if it's a man or a woman, but they say, "Dr. Nina, I already know what I'm feeling. I feel my feelings, but nothing changes. So clearly, food is the problem." Food is in all caps in the message, by the way. That's hence my emphasis. Okay, Twitter person and everyone who's listening, look, here's the thing. If you've felt your feelings and nothing changes, you're probably feeling emotions that you're aware of, but something else is going on that's out of awareness. That's what the unconscious is. It's out of awareness, but not out of operation. So if you've cried and cried and cried and you're still sad, then there's another emotion that's not getting expressed, like anger. Now, women often get the message that it's not okay to be angry. What's the phrase? Nice girls don't get angry. Nice girls don't get mad. If we get mad, oh, that's not nice. Many of us then only express anger by getting mad at ourselves for what we're eating or for what we weigh, but our anger really belongs, again, to something or someone else. Or, on the other hand, if you're angry, if you're mad and you've just been super mad for a long time, maybe underneath all that anger is a lot of sadness that needs your attention. In fact, men often have a hard time expressing vulnerable, sad feelings because they get the message that boys don't cry. You know, man up, boys don't cry. And so guys tend to turn sadness into anger. So if you or someone you know is angry all the time, then maybe they're scared of the sadness and vulnerability that might be there underneath. Remember, if you're turning to food, you are almost certainly turning away from something else. And now you have the formula to figure it out. So, as you can see, eating for comfort or eating for any reason to sort of resolve something psychological is what I like to call a frenemy. It's a friend in that it does something for you. It distracts you from pain. It feels good. It takes you away from what's truly bothering you. But it's also an enemy because it hurts your body, destroys your confidence, and damages your self-esteem. And by the way, I should make a distinction between, you know, having ice cream for dessert or having some chips with your lunch or eating pasta. That's not necessarily associated with those types of emotions. What I'm talking about is when you're using food in a way to resolve the way that you feel. If you're using food to feel better, that's the association with the food mood formula. But, you know, ultimately, it's fine to have ice cream for dessert. It's fine to have chips every once in a while, as long as you say, that was good, instead of, I'm using this to feel better. That's the difference. So, okay, to change your relationship to food, first, you figure out what you're actually feeling, which I just helped you do with the food mood formula. The second thing you need to know is how to respond to yourself when you're upset, other than eating. Now, one way is to turn your inner critic into a friend. And this is a crucial step that really helped my client, Emily. When she came to see me, Emily had gained and lost 20 pounds more times than she could count. She calculated that she had lost at least 300 pounds in total since she went on her first diet at the age of 10. And she joked that she always found those lost pounds. Now, Emily knew her compulsion to eat had absolutely nothing to do with hunger, and she often ate until she was in physical pain. In other areas of her life, Emily was doing pretty well. She worked as a literary agent, she lived in the Hollywood Hills, she had a nice group of friends. She was successful in every area of her life except one, her weight. So one day, she started the session by announcing, I'm feeling really bad about my body, she said. A few nights earlier, she'd been at a party having a great time, and suddenly she was drawn to the dessert table, which was full of desserts, cake, cookies, brownies, desserts. She felt like some invisible force was pulling her towards sugar, like the Death Star pulling in the Millennium Falcon in Star Wars. And yes, I am a super big Star Wars geek. For those of you who don't know the first Star Wars, the Death Star has this crazy gravitational pull that can pull entire spacecrafts into it, and they can't resist it all. And that's how Emily felt about the dessert table. It was the Death Star, and she was helpless against it. So she started eating cake and brownies, and she could not stop. She finally just like snuck a few brownies into a napkin and hid them in her pocket. And then she went into the bathroom to eat them in private. And she told me she was standing in the bathroom, stuffing brownies into her mouth, tears running down her face because she felt so powerless and out of control and horrible. And she was barely even tasting anything. But she could not stop. So what kind of mood do you think Emily was in, given that she was eating brownies and cake? If you're thinking that she was feeling empty and lonely, you're absolutely right. She was filling a void. She said to me, it was horrible. Afterwards, I told myself, and this is Emily talking to herself. Afterwards, I told myself, you are so disgusting. You have no willpower, and you're completely out of control and gross. You make me sick, she said to herself. I asked Emily what was happening right before she felt pulled towards the Death Star dessert table. Because, like I said, she'd been having a good time. But then she told me that what happened right before this, a few minutes before, was that her ex-boyfriend Henry showed up with his new girlfriend, who was much thinner than Emily. And when Emily was telling me about it, she really didn't seem that fazed. She's like, oh, it's okay. What happened with Henry? That's ancient history. We're all good now. Then she said, "Oh, I feel so gross and disgusting. I hate my body. That's what's bothering me." But feeling bad about her body was Emily's way of expressing and distracting from other bad feelings. Seeing her ex with someone new, that was painful. Even though she told herself she was fine with the breakup, Emily felt empty and disconnected when it came to her relationships with guys. So filling up was a way of filling the emptiness inside. Also, and this is important, by eating until she was stuffed, until it hurt, until she was in physical pain, she converted her emotional pain to physical pain. What Emily needed was a different way to respond to herself when she was upset. Now, remember how Emily said to herself, "You are so disgusting. You have no willpower. You're completely out of control and gross." Have you ever said anything like that to yourself? Like talking to yourself as if you were someone else, talking to yourself in second person? "You're not good enough. You're never going to lose weight. You're a complete failure." Mean, huh? Well, if you talk to yourself in the second person, calling yourself you, then you're very familiar with your inner critic. And that critic is horrible. It makes you feel bad. And you know what? You might just be eating sometimes to escape your own mean critical voice. So it is crucial to change this critical voice into a friend. When I asked Emily to say, instead of saying "you are completely gross," I said, "say I." So when she said, "I am completely gross," she really had a hard time saying it. She said, "God, that feels really harsh." And that's because it is harsh. Changing the way you talk to yourself can be very, very powerful. There's a quote I love. It's by this woman, Marcia Hutchinson, who's in England. And it's, quote, "If you talk to your friends the way you talk to your body, you'd have no friends left." Isn't that great? It just sort of says it all. If you talk to your friends the way you talk to your body, you'd have no friends left. So you have to learn to talk to yourself the way you talk to your friends, assuming you're nice to your friends. Well, if you weren't, you wouldn't have friends, right? So one of my golden rules is this. If you would not say it to a friend, child, or loved one, don't say it to yourself. Instead of being critical, be kind. And now this can be a challenging shift after spending many years being mean to yourself. So how do you make that shift? What do you do? Okay, here's one thing you can do. Imagine you have a friend who's feeling upset. Maybe she had a fight with her husband, or he had a bad day at work. Do you say, oh, you're upset? Here, have some ice cream. Have some cookies. Eat this pizza. Eat it until you feel sick. That'll help. Probably not. I don't think so. You'd probably say something like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. That's really tough. You know, how can I help?" You got to practice doing that for yourself. Be a friend to yourself. And do that by first acknowledging what it is you're feeling. Validate what you're feeling. Remind yourself you won't always feel this way. And then ask yourself what you need to feel better. I like to think of it as this acronym I made up, VARY. Validate, acknowledge, reassure yourself. I promise you, it will be much more effective than calling yourself names. Another way to be supportive of yourself is to really take care with your tone. Now, the same words can feel very different depending on what tone you use. As an example, one of my patients came in and said that she tried talking to herself and it didn't work. She's like, "It did nothing for me, this talking to yourself thing. No, it doesn't work on me. I don't understand. I don't even understand it." So I asked her to repeat what she had said to herself. And it was this. I'm going to try to recreate the moment for you. Okay, all right. Here goes. This is what she said to herself, and this is how she said it. "I'm all right. This won't last. It will be okay." Well, oh, no wonder she didn't feel better. Is an exasperated, cold, flat tone something you'd say to someone else to make them feel better? No, I don't think so. You'd probably say it more like this. "You're all right. This won't last. It'll be okay." So almost the same words can sound completely different when you use a different tone. A soothing tone can feel like a verbal hug. And that's how you talk to yourself like a good friend. And when you soothe yourself with words, when you respond to yourself with words, when you're a friend to yourself, guess what? You won't need food as a friend. You won't need food for comfort or distraction or to go numb or to escape yourself. Now, the third thing I want to talk about today is how to make peace with food so you can stop thinking about it every single minute and start living your life. Here's the thing. Thinking about food all the time, as well as actually overeating or binging, can also be a way of distracting yourself from other things. Now, you already know about emotional eating, but I want to bring your attention to something I call bypass binging, which means using food to bypass conflicts or feelings that are so upsetting we don't even recognize they're there. They're unconscious, but they still have a strong influence over us. Just like Jenna with the ice cream, she wasn't aware she was upset about her sisters, or Emily and her ex-boyfriend. Both of them used food to bypass their feelings. And I'm going to give you another example of bypass binging. One of my patients, let's call her Michelle. She ate perfectly during the day. Perfectly, clean, as she put it, perfectly. But at night, everything just went south. Maybe you can relate. Every night after dinner, Michelle would develop what she called a weakness for chips. Now, she and her husband used to read together at night. They were doing some challenge where they didn't watch TV for a whole entire year. And Michelle could never get through the book she was reading because she kept getting up and eating Doritos, usually until the whole bag was gone. And it was like the family size bag. So Michelle was familiar with my food mood formula, so she knew that Doritos, chips, had to do with anger, but she was not angry, and she just could not figure it out. Now keep in mind, eating that bag of chips only happened at night and only while she and her husband were reading. You can probably guess what I asked her next. Yes, I asked her what she was reading, and it turned out to be, drumroll, 50 Shades of Grey. Now, this book was really triggering because it activated all kinds of complicated feelings about intimacy and trust and sexuality, but even more so, the book deals with surrendering control. And that's what really hit home for Michelle, not when it came to intimacy, it was control in other areas in her relationship. Because the truth is, here's the truth. Michelle did not want to read books for a year. She actually wanted to Netflix and chill, but she felt as if she had to go on this year-long TV diet because it's what her husband wanted. Michelle did not realize that she was being triggered by reading the book because, like Jenna and ice cream, before that uncomfortable feeling of resentment towards her husband, which made her nervous, could even reach her conscious awareness, she turned to Doritos as a way of expressing her anger towards him, even though she took it out on herself. So Michelle and I worked through her conflicts about control and speaking up and intimacy and all kinds of things that had nothing to do with food. She started speaking up and actually telling her husband how she felt, and it turned out he wasn't controlling so much as he just thought that she thought the way he did. So when she started speaking up, their relationship changed dramatically, and so did her relationship to Doritos. Again, if we'd been focused on chips, nothing would ever have changed. And again, keep in mind, this was all completely out of Michelle's conscious awareness. Consciously, she was just trying to enjoy her book. What helped Michelle was a little magic. I actually have a magic wand in my office, and I have been told that it works, just very slowly. But let's imagine it worked immediately. What if I could wave my wand over you? And immediately that wand would take away all thoughts of food, weight, and body image. What would be on your mind instead? For Michelle, it was realizing that she was mad at her husband for being bossy about about the TV thing. What would you be worried about if you weren't thinking about your weight? Now, people have told me they'd be thinking about all kinds of things. They'd be worried about ending up alone, never getting married, never finding someone, worried about never having kids, or they'd feel guilty for wanting their kids to move out. They'd be worried about paying the mortgage, worried about rejection, scared about being stuck in a job they hated forever, or worried they'd never get a promotion, worried that they were not good enough in some indefinable way. What would you be worried about if you weren't thinking about food or your weight? If you'd like to join in, the call-in number is 818-602-4929. Again, 818-602-4929. You can tweet me at Win the Diet War or email dr.nina@winthedietwar.com. So as you can see, it's easier to think about losing weight than to consider the kinds of things that may be weighing heavily on your mind and your heart. So if you could magically take away all thoughts of food, weight, body, you'd be left with what's really going on inside. And when you focus on what is eating at you and deal with it in a new way, you stop focusing on food. So as you may know, today is the first day of the show. Yay! I'm so excited to be here. And I've been letting people in my community know about it and asking them to send in questions or send along any thoughts they'd like me to address. And I got this email from Cynthia in Vegas. She says, Dr. Nina, I feel guilty. I feel really guilty every time I eat something I shouldn't. I feel terrible about myself whenever I eat something I shouldn't. And then I end up eating more because I feel guilty. Oh, Cynthia, I bet a lot of people listening can relate to you. Cynthia, you're in a vicious cycle caused by two things. One is the idea that you should or should not eat something, as I like to say. Don't should on yourself. But the second and most important is that you feel guilty for eating. So here's the thing about guilt. We feel guilty for something we're doing or not doing. Guilt can be understood as being about something you did or didn't do. So guilt references behavior and actions. You feel guilty when you think you've done something wrong or when you choose not to do something you think you should do. So guilt sounds like, oh, I've done something really bad and wrong. Guess what? Eating is not a crime. You haven't done anything wrong if you eat something yummy. Guilt is very different from shame, which is about who you are as a person, about your essential character. Now, often people say they feel guilty when they really are talking about shame. So with shame, it's not that you've done a bad thing. It's that there's something essentially bad about you. So shame sounds like there's something really wrong with me. There's something just inherently unlovable about me. I don't know what it is, but it's there. So think about something, Cynthia, and anyone who's out there, think about something that makes you feel guilt or shame. What is your crime? Like, do you feel guilty for eating that pizza or wanting ice cream? Do you feel shame because you ate pizza or ice cream? And if so, what does it mean about you? Often it means something like, well, I want too much. I have no self-control. I'm completely weak. These are the things that people usually tell me. Well, if you feel guilty about eating too much or having something you think you shouldn't have, ask yourself what you feel guilty about that has nothing to do with food. If your guilt is not attached to food and your weight, what would you feel guilty about? And if you feel a pervasive sense of shame, a sense that there's something just inherently wrong with you, question that. Really, what is so bad about you? What do you imagine is wrong with your character, your basic and essential self? And where did you learn to relate to yourself this way? Now, one way that people develop the idea that there's something wrong with them is from childhood. Kids who are treated badly to whatever extent think that they are bad. They don't think, oh, you know, my parents are going through something and they're just incapable of meeting my needs right now. So, you know, I understand that. No, kids do not think that. Kids think, My parents are not giving me what I need, so I must not deserve good treatment. There must be something bad about me. So if you feel bad, you feel like you are bad. And that actually, when you're a kid, it gives you an illusion of hope. Like, if you can figure out what's wrong with you, what's so bad about you, then you can fix it. And when you fix it, then you get the good, loving treatment. The problem is, there was never anything bad or wrong about you. So this strategy to give yourself hope ends up being a conviction that there's something very, very wrong with you. But the good news is, when you identify and process your core guilt and shame, you're going to be less likely to express those emotions through food. Now, I want to switch gears a little because I also have a really fun way to deal with guilt, or actually with anything that upsets you. Okay, here's what you do. Get out a piece of paper and write down everything you feel guilty about, or anything else, sad about, angry about. And it has to be paper, actual physical paper. It could be pencil, it could be pen, that doesn't matter. It just has to be paper. So, quick story. When I was in grad school, some of my fellow candidates and I, we experienced a lot of anxiety about the future. We were really worried. We were worried about keeping up our grades. We were worried about finding internships. We were worried about getting jobs. We were worried about doing well at those jobs. You know, what if we weren't good at what we've put so much time into doing? What if? So much anxiety. So one night, some of us held a get rid of the anxiety party. And we all took pieces of paper and we wrote down our fears on a piece of paper, just like you're going to do. And then we tore up the list into teeny tiny little small pieces of paper and we flushed them down the toilet. Oh, and afterwards, we felt better. I mean, we did. We felt a lot better. And later, when I started having some anxiety, when fear began creeping back into my mind, I would recall the feeling of tearing up that paper, tearing up that list of anxiety, and flushing my fears down the drain. And I would immediately feel empowered, and the fear started going away. So now it's your turn to get rid of the guilt. So rip up that list. Tear it up into as many pieces as possible. It may sound a little weird. You might be going like, what is she talking about? She is crazy. What? Tear up a piece of paper? That can't help. Oh, but it does. It feels strangely satisfying. And you can do that with anything that bothers you. So, in summary, here are three things we talked about that you can do right away to get off that diet roller coaster. One, you can and must ditch dieting, because weight loss is not about willpower. It's about realizing what you're truly hungry for and feeding your soul. Remember, smooth, filling, crunchy to help you identify what's going on inside. The second thing you've got to do is make your inner critic into a friend. And the best way to do that is to talk to yourself as if you were talking to a friend in both words and tone. The last thing is to use that magic wand to identify what you're distracting yourself from, because if you're turning to food, it means you're turning away from something else. And when you address that something else, whatever it is, then food becomes breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks instead of a battle zone. And that's the key. We want to win the diet war by making food into something that you actually enjoy instead of something that you're constantly battling with yourself about and feeling bad about yourself. Honestly, feeling there's so much you could do with your time and your energy. And when you feel bad about yourself because you ate something, that is so detrimental to your soul and your spirit. Now, I also want to tell you why this work is so important to me. Why do I do what I do? Well, when I was 5 years old, because the reason goes back to me being 5 years old, when I randomly, or seemingly randomly, as I'll get to that later, I decided that my thighs were fat. I wasn't reading magazines. I wasn't watching TV. I had no media influences. Like, the only magazines at our house were probably Newsweek or Time, something like that. Highlights magazine. So I just thought that if my legs were thinner, I'd somehow be better. And by the way, I was a perfectly normal weight kid. So this became an obsession that got worse as I got older. When I look at my old journals from high school, every page of every journal was full of numbers. What I ate, what I didn't eat, how much I weighed, how much I was going to weigh. I fell asleep counting calories and fat grams, wondering if I'd lose weight the next morning or gain it. When I hiked with friends, I wasn't focused on, oh, it's a beautiful day, this is great. No, I was not enjoying that. I was focused on how many calories I was burning on that hill. And I was always on some crazy diet that was usually very restrictive. And eventually my willpower would fail and I would binge. Then I'd take laxatives or use other measures so I would not gain weight. And I was also in a constant state of anxiety. And of course my weight also did go up and down. So I finally began therapy in college, and I shared my boyfriend issues, my goals, my dreams, my fears, my family stuff, my friend stuff. I was open with my therapist about every aspect of my life except one. I never told her what was going on with food, not once. Honestly, I was too ashamed to admit the truth, even to my therapist. And then in therapy, I began noticing some changes. Started to experience an appetite for life. I also started responding differently when I was upset. I became a friend to myself instead of a critic, just exactly what I'm coaching you guys to do. And eventually, I stopped using food to cope. By the time I left therapy, all my crazy food behaviors, which were really a cycle of eating disorders, all of it was gone. And not once, not a single time had I told my therapist what was going on with food. And people say to me, like, how is this possible? How do you recover from a cycle of eating disorders without ever talking about food? Like, how is that? That doesn't even make sense. Well, it does make a lot of sense, and that's because my behavior with food was a symptom of the real problem, which was my toxic relationship to myself. When I changed my relationship to myself, everything with food changed too. Now, you might be wondering why, as a young child, why at the age of 5, did I suddenly decide that my thighs were too big? Well, in my family, I was often told that I was too loud, too sensitive, too emotional, too dramatic. The message was that I was too much to handle, just too much to deal with. And my 5-year-old mind translated this into being literally too much, too big. So, you know, I know from experience what it's like to struggle, and I also know the complete transformation is absolutely possible. That's what inspired me to do this work. There's so many people who are struggling, who think badly of themselves, who think they're, you know, beat themselves up for being food addicts, and they have no willpower, and they have a problem with food, and they feel terrible about themselves, and it affects their whole lives. Relationships suffer. Everything suffers. It's so detrimental to your spirit when you feel this way about yourself. But as a psychoanalyst, I know that eating issues are symptoms of the problem, not the problem. And I will help you stop worrying about what you're eating and start focusing on what's eating at you. I really like the analogy of a weed and a root. Now, we can't see roots, but we know they're there because they keep growing weeds. And if you pull a weed, what happens? Unless you get the root out, it grows back. So dieting is like pulling a weed at the top and thinking it's not going to grow back. The problem is going to keep coming back until you get to that root. But the good news is when you do, it's gone for good. So in this show, which is every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, I'm going to help you do some emotional gardening, I guess we could call it. And what I've learned from my personal experience and by treating thousands of people, both in my clinical private practice and my online program, is that it is never too late to change. It's never too late. I've had people from their teens to their 70s who've been able to totally shift their lives. There is always, always hope. Now, we have a couple minutes left. If anyone wants to call me for a quick moment. I would love to hear from you. The call-in line is 818-602-4929. Again, that's 818-602-4929. And just so you know, the format of the show going on every week, I'm going to have a topic that addresses the root that I was just talking about. I'm going to discuss the topic a little bit and invite you to call in and tell me about what's going on with you, and I will help you get to that root so we can get rid of that diet mentality, break free of the diet trap, get off the diet roller coaster, stop dieting, and start living. So thank you so much for joining me today on this first episode of the Dr. Nina Show. Again, I'm here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio to give you the skinny on weight loss without dieting. Because again, it's not what you're eating that's the problem, it's what's eating at you. And I'd love to hear from you, so call in 818-602-4929 for next week. Write that number down, 818-602-4929, or send me a message on Twitter at Win the Diet War, or Facebook. Find me on Facebook at Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. And give me any questions that you'd like me to cover on the show. I would be happy to answer them. Thank you again, and see you next week.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.